and welcome to Fresh Voices, the podcast where we tell stories and learn new perspectives. I'm Julia Pinney, Voices Editor for the Georgetown Voice. Today I'm here with Hannah Song to talk about her Korean-American identity. Hannah, would you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Hannah. I'm a sophomore in the college and the current photo editor for The Voice.
So I'm super happy you're here. You wrote a beautiful piece in The Voice this week, and I was hoping we could talk a bit about the topics you bring up in it. When did your dad first move to the United States?
He was around 4 or 5.
And did he have any siblings?
Yeah, so he is the second of 4 kids.
Okay.
So his youngest sister had just been born. She was like a few months old, and they all moved together.
Okay, and I know that you talked a lot with him as you were writing your piece. When did you get the sense that he lost his grasp of Korean? How long did it take him to lose it?
I'm not totally sure. I didn't ask him that specifically. I know that when they came to the U.S., it took him and his siblings like maybe like a year or two to like fully learn English. Like they learned it pretty fast. But no, I'm not sure how long it took them to. I mean, they still speak Korean, just not super well.
Just not super well. Yeah. Okay. And what were the tools that they used to learn English?
Honestly, they weren't really given any.
Okay.
They were one of the first Korean families to move to Baltimore. And, like, at the time, there were no, like, ESL classes. They didn't even really have, like, a Korean community to, like, help adjust or anything like that. I think that was actually pretty hard for them because they were just mm-hmm. thrown into, like, English classes and expected to just pick it up. But they, like, in their first day of classes, they had no idea what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
So, they were just kind of left to their own devices.
And was there any sort of Korean community for them to keep up their language and keep up their heritage from Korea?
Not at first, I wouldn't say. I don't think that they really had any, like, Korean friends their own age. I think they had each other. Like, I mean, there were 4 of them. But no, not really. Okay. I think more Koreans came later to Baltimore, and, like, my grandma was friends with a lot of them still.
Mm-hmm.
But when they were kids, not really, no.
So could you talk a little bit about what you learned about first language attrition when you were researching this piece?
Yeah, so first language attrition is basically what happens when a child loses some or all of their first language. It's really common in kids who are adopted. Like, you'll see kids come over to the U.S. or to any country, really, when they're, like, 4 or 5 or 6. And then in a couple years, they don't speak their first language anymore. In immigrant children, it can be common if there's not, like, a big community, if the parents don't really emphasize, like, responding back in the first language and other things like that. So it can happen to different extents for different people. So for my dad and his siblings, obviously, they still understand a lot of Korean. They can still communicate mostly with their parents. But it's harder for them to speak. They speak, like, I hate this word. They call it Konglish.
Konglish, okay.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, like, Spanglish, but it's just, like, gross-sounding. They can't speak it as fluently as they would have if they had spent more time in Korea.
Okay. And have your grandparents, with time, picked up a bit of Konglish, or do they mainly still speak just Korean?
It's different for my granddad and my grandma. So they both understand English almost perfectly well, I think. Like, my grandma's sneaky. Like, she understands a lot more than you think that she does.
Okay.
And you'll, like, say things around her because she doesn't really speak English. And then she'll, like, bring it up later and – or, like, do things about it later in, like, really sneaky ways. And so they understand, like, a lot more than they let on.
Yeah.
Reminds
me when – we're all younger and our parents start spelling things.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when my mom used to be like, oh, today we have to go to bed early because tomorrow we're going to go to somewhere special. DISNEYLAND, right, Dad? Like, I'm like, yeah. I know that's Disneyland, Mom. She's like, darn, you learned to spell.
Yeah, exactly. And my granddad speaks more English than my grandma does just because, like, with work and everything, he was, like, a business guy for a while, so he really had to pick up the language. My grandma, like, when more Koreans started coming over, really, like, immersed herself and, like, put herself into the Korean community. So she understands most of her English, but she – most of her English. She understands
most of English.
Most of English. but she doesn't speak it very well. Like, she can, like, say phrases and stuff, but it's like, yeah, it's hard to talk to her sometimes. And we get around it, but.
Yeah. No, you figure it out, yeah. And when you were growing up, was not knowing Korean something that made you particularly angry?
Yeah, I did talk about that in my piece. I think the main motivation for that was I just, like, really wanted to be bilingual. Like, okay. I thought it was the coolest thing ever. I was so jealous of anyone that I met who could speak a second language. And I'd always be like, I think the misconception that I had was I thought that my dad could have taught me Korean because I thought that, because, you know, I would hear him speaking in Korean with my grandma or, like, on the phone or whatever. So I'd be like, I could have been bilingual. Like, you failed. Like, you took away all these things from me. Like, why would you not teach me this language? And that was, like, the main reason.
What did you see the advantages of being bilingual? Did you think it would make you kind of cooler? Or did you see, like, professional benefits in the future? What was kind of the main thing that made you particularly annoyed with your parents?
Yeah, I think it's hard to say what was running through my head back then because I was a small kid. I was a long time ago. But I think, I don't know. I just think I thought it was cool. Like, I think obviously, like, I knew, like, I was taking Spanish classes and all my teachers would be like, it's going to be so good for you in the professional world, even though they would only teach us, like, the colors of the rainbow. And so I knew that there were, like, real world benefits and I wanted them, but mostly I was like, this would have been so cool to, like, talk to my sisters when other people are around and other people aren't going to know what we're talking about and, like, we're going to be really cool and, like, have our own language. And I think it was just something that I wanted really badly.
Have you always wanted to, because I know in your piece you talked about how you thought that your biracial identity was one of the most interesting parts of yourself. Why was that? Why did you find it so appealing to learn more?
I think part of it was, honestly, I came from, like, my back home, I'm one of, like, two Asian girls in, like, my grade. And, like, when I was younger and, like, my lower school, there were, like three of us, and, like, two of them were my sisters. So I think, like, this is, take it as a good thing or a bad thing, take it as you will, but, like, I think it, in my head, like, it made me kind of different, like, it made me kind of interesting. It's almost like there was something there that, like, my friends didn't have, and, like, I had this cool grandma who made these, like, weird foods that were, like, really fun and, like, tasted really good, yeah. And,
what were some of those weird foods?
The weirdest one is probably naengmyeon, which is, like, my favorite food. It's these, like, cold, so it's, like, a cold noodle dish. It's, like, really thin brown buckwheat noodles.
Mm-hmm. Are they homemade noodles?
I don't know. I don't think so.
This doesn't really matter.
Yeah, the broth is a lot of work to make, so I think that would be too much.
Yeah, yeah.
My grandma's old. And it's got hard-boiled eggs, some sort of beef, Korean pears, pickled cucumbers, and, like, radish, I think. And then what my grandma will do is she'll put, like, a little Sprite in there. Sprite, yeah. Which I always thought that was, like, a very, like, unique thing and, like, very different and, like, weird. And then I was visiting my roommate who's also Korean. Like, her mom moved here, I don't know, sometime when she was, like, college age maybe. And I was telling her, I was like, my grandma put Sprite in our naengmyeon. And she was like, oh, yeah, that's, like, normal. I was like, that's normal? That's not just something that we do?
Is that to make it sweeter? Or what's the use of the Sprite?
I think it's, like, a tart kind of thing. Like, okay. It's a very, like, it's kind of almost, like, tangy and, like, vinegary, the broth. But just, like, a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I think that probably has something to do with it. She doesn't put a lot in there. It's very small amount.
Okay. Great. And so I guess now switching topics just a bit. You came to Georgetown, and what was that like going from a school where you were only one of two Asian girls to coming to Georgetown? Did you have expectations before you came of how you would fit in here?
I don't think so. I don't think I thought anything would be different. I was just like, I mean, I think when I do things, the first thought that comes into my head isn't, like, how will I fit in with the white people and the Asians, you know? Yeah. Like, that's not, like,
yeah.
That's not, like, my first thought. I was just, like, I'm going to college. Like, cool. I don't think I really thought about it.
But, I know that you're taking Korean right now.
Yeah.
Did you think at all about, I want to seek out the Korean culture? Did you think a lot about taking Korean before you came to Georgetown, or did you kind of come to Georgetown and start thinking about what classes you're going to take and suddenly think, oh, actually, the Korean, that sounds like a good option?
Yeah, so I've always known that I wanted to go to Korea. Like, it's always been, like, a really, like, huge goal of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so in high school, I won this, like, paper contest where basically you write an essay that describes, like, a trip that you want to take, and then they'll give you the money to take the trip after you graduate from college.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's really cool. And I wrote mine about going to Korea. Mm-hmm. And in my essay, I was like, I had just found out that I was going to Georgetown. And I was like, when I go to Georgetown, I will take Korean classes to prepare for this trip if you give it to me. So in high school, I like wrote that I would take classes, which I think I wanted to anyways.
Yeah.
But that was the main motivation.
Kind of motivation.
Yeah.
I like that because it's such a delayed gratification to basically tell a high school senior, okay, you get to go on this awesome trip.
In 4 years.
In 4 years. And
yeah.
I mean, I can imagine maybe you'd say, oh, you know, I'd really love to go to Germany, and then mm-hmm. realize that you love the French language, and suddenly you've, I mean, can you change your mind, or do you sign up for a trip for 4 years later, and then that's where you're going? I mean, no, it'd be awesome to go to Germany, even if you're learning French, but I'm curious.
No, you can technically use the money for whatever you want. Like, I don't think they hold you to anything. Like, if you didn't want to go on a trip, I don't think you'd have to go on one.
Yeah.
I think you'd be doing a disservice to yourself. But no, it's really like, here's however, I don't actually know how much they give you. Here's money, do with it what you will, but it's like meant for the trip.
Okay.
But so yeah, I think you'd be able to change it a little bit.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I just was curious. And how have your Korean classes been going?
They're fun. I mean, I'm still in the intro level, so it's not like super hard yet. It's funny, my Korean professor, I have one of my middle names is Korean. And so I told her at the beginning of the year my Korean name, and she is the only person in the entire world who, like, calls me by my Korean name, which is so funny.
What's your Korean name? What's your Korean middle name?
Jung-hae.
Jung-hae, okay.
But it's hard, and it's so frustrating sometimes because, like, the word structure is so different. And, like, the sounds, after a couple months, I kind of got used to because I think, like, I've just been hearing them for my whole life. So that wasn't, like, as hard as, like, the grammar, which is, like, super annoying because, like, in Korean, like, the word structure doesn't really matter. So, like, in English, we normally have, like, subject, verb, like, subject, verb, object, whatever, like, you know, the normal order. In mm-hmm. Korean, it literally doesn't matter as long as the verb is at the end. So the verb will be at the end of the sentence, and everything else, you'll just, like, add a little sound after to indicate what, like, what part of speech it is. And you can just, like, mix it up however the hell you want. And then the way that they do, like, tense changes and, like, conjunctions is they'll add, like, one time. They'll cut off half of the, like, for a verb to conjugate it in a certain way. Literally all they do is they'll, like, cut off half the word and then add a teeny little sound off of it. And you're supposed to know, like, what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, it's definitely frustrating. And, like, I'll go home to my family, and I'll be like, how many, like, I'm learning Korean. She'd be like, cool, you can teach your sister now.
Yeah.
And
has your dad been able to help you?
When I have questions, I normally ask my aunt.
Okay.
Like, my dad's brother's wife, because she moved here when she was, like, 14, maybe. So she, like, she still has, like, a Korean accent. And it's just easier to ask her questions because she, like, has more of, like, she can explain the grammar more. I think it's hard for heritage speakers to, like, explain why they say the things that they do because they've never had, like, a formal grammar teaching.
Mm-hmm.
But if you had gone to school in Korea and been taught, like, this is how grammar works, then it's easier for you to explain it later on.
That makes sense. Has there ever been a moment at Georgetown where you haven't felt Korean enough?
That's a hard question. I guess so, yeah, or else I wouldn't have written that article.
Yeah.
I think the first reason that it's a weird thing to say, like, not Korean enough, I guess. Like, it's not something that
I guess it was just a very striking line in your piece. You talked about, I don't feel Korean enough, and I also don't feel American enough.
Yeah.
And I guess something that was running through my mind was, well, I think umbrella, I think American is an umbrella term in a way. And aren't you just one type of American and the many types of Americans who live in our country?
Yeah. I mean, I've always felt American. I think I actually changed the wording of that sentence because I think it more reflected, like, the feeling was more, was supposed to reflect more, like, the feeling of not being Korean. Georgetown was the first time that I had ever met, like, a foreign exchange Korean student. And the first time I had really, like, been around a lot of Asians, like, outside of my family members. Like, I remember, I mean, I think the worst of it was probably, one, when, like, the random people were coming up to me and being like, "You're not Korean." I was like, "Why did you say that?
When did that happen?"
It happened a few times. One was, like, at a Bible study.
Really?
Yeah. And someone was asking me, like, pretty much, like, the conversation that's in the beginning of my piece really happened, like, verbatim, like two or three times, where they're like, "Well, have you ever been to the country?" And I was like, "No, but I'm trying to go." And they're like, "Well, do you speak the language?" I was like, "No, but I'm taking lessons next semester." They're like, "Well, then why do you keep saying you're Korean?" Because I am.
I feel like it's a very unfair thing for someone
to invalidate
your experience and invalidate your heritage.
Yeah, it was more like, I think the place that they were coming from was, I think in America we have a very different sense of, like, race and culture than other countries do, in a sense that, like, since we're, like, a country made of immigrants, there's this idea that, like, you're American and then you might be something else, so, like, Korean-American, but, like, in other countries it doesn't really matter what your race is, you're still, like, that nationality. So I think people were looking at me and being like, "You're not – your nationality is not Korean. Your nationality is American and only American. You have no claim to Korean."
Okay.
And I think what's different here is, like, obviously I'm not, like, a Korean citizen, you know? I've never been to the country. I have no claim to, like, nationality. Like, nationality-wise, I am American, like, through and through. But there's such a different element of, like, culture here. And, like, I think the immigrant story gets very, like, unique in that way, where your family, like, holds on to this, like, culture and this nationality and, like, this language that's different than the place that you're coming to. And I think people who don't know that, what it's like to be either an immigrant or, like, what that is like in America, just don't really get it.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize all of that at the time. At the time, I was just like, "Why are you saying those mean things to me?"
My goodness. Have you ever felt the urge to join Asian identity groups on campus?
Yeah. Actually, I remember, it was, like, a year, like, last semester, last year, I joined a Korean Asian Bible study. And, well, first of all, I mean, Cap Fair was kind of horrible because I was trying to join all, like, the culture clubs and, like, I think maybe it's because, like I don't, like, to some, it's very interesting, like, how different people see, like, my ethnicity. Like, some people very clearly are like, "Oh, she's Asian," and some people are, like, very much like, "She's white," and some people think, like, can tell that I'm mixed or whatever. But I think a lot of them, like, couldn't tell that I was Asian all the way or something like that because, like, I just couldn't get their attention for the life of me at the Asian culture clubs. Like, nothing, not to, like, shit on the Asian culture clubs, but it was so hard to get their attention. And I went up to the Bible study, and I had to, like, stand there and, like, wave my arms and be like, "Talk to me, please. I want to join your club." And I was like, "Oh, why is it, like, the Bible study people don't want me?"
Yeah, you would think the Bible study people but then, would be, like, so welcoming.
Yeah, but then I eventually I started talking to the woman who was at the – who's representing them, and I mean, she's so nice. Like, these people are, like, the nicest people in the world, and, like, I'm still in touch with some of them. But I went to the first meeting because they were like, "We'll have bubble tea," and I was like, "I love bubble tea." And so I went by myself, and it was like, I mean, it was an Asian Bible study, so, like, everybody was Asian, which, like, makes sense.
Yeah, you can guess that.
But for some reason, I just had, like, the weirdest feeling the whole time. And, like, I, like, wasn't comfortable and I, like, felt, like wrong somehow. And mm-hmm. I, like, it wasn't anything that they were doing. Like, they were, like...
I've been in situations like that before.
It's they were not so that, nice. Yeah. And I couldn't figure out, like, why I felt like that. And it was very strange. And I, like, couldn't bring myself to go back, even though they kept wanting to, like, you know, like, get lunch with me and stuff like that. And then I was talking to my friend about it afterwards, and I realized that that was the first time that I had been in a room of, like, only Asians that weren't my family.
Oh, wow.
And I, like, and I was like, that's so weird. And I realized that, like, the feeling that I had was, like, I felt like an intruder, you know? Like, I felt like I shouldn't be here, not because, like, they're doing anything wrong, but, like, I felt like I was doing something wrong, you know? Like, I felt like I wasn't supposed to be there.
Because you'd never had that kind of experience in high school growing up.
Yeah, I guess. Like, I guess that's what it was.
Yeah, wow. So you're going on this trip in a few years, and I guess how else do you see yourself really taking on your Korean identity? I know in your piece you talk about trying to reclaim traditions, mm-hmm. Korean traditions. Off the top of my head, I can't remember them specifically, yeah. But you were talking about making a specific Korean dish for your kid's birthday. What dish is that?
Well, on Korean birthdays, you're supposed to like eat seaweed soup. It's called like mikguk or something like that. I don't really remember. And actually, I never had seaweed soup growing up for my birthday, which I was also mad at my dad for not giving me seaweed soup. But but no, that's like a legitimate fear. Like I feel like I've been really lucky to like have my grandma to like make me like all of the food that she has. And it was, like, definitely one of, like, the best parts of my childhood growing up, like, having all, like, the home-cooked meals. And I want that to, like, you know, I want to, like, be able to pass that down. But I've tried to, like, get my grandma to teach me how to make these things before. Mm-hmm. And literally she'll show me the noodles. She'll be, like, noodles. And then she'll have this broth and she'll be, like, chicken and beef. And then she'll put the noodles in and then she'll be, like, cook it. And I'll be, like, for how long? And she'll just be, like, till it's ready, like, obviously. And she'll be, like, grabbing random things and, like, throwing it in. And she'll just, like, it's a grandma thing, you know, where, like, they don't follow a recipe. There are no family recipes because she just does whatever she thinks is right.
So you kind of have to look at it. You kind of have to watch her and write it all down madly as she does it.
Yeah, but that's she does funny. It differently each time. So it's, like, you can't even tell.
How has your relationship changed since you started taking Korean?
With my grandma?
Yeah, with your grandma.
Not much. I mean, the best part is, like, I've been able to go over there and she'll, like, pull out, like, a little children's book and be, like, she'll sit me down, she'll go, read it. And I'm, like, I'll be, like, okay. And then she'll tell me how all my pronunciations are wrong and everything I'm saying is wrong. So it's bonding time. But no, not that much.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's useful in its own way. Yeah. being corrected.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably kind of fun in a way.
Yeah.
Just kind of, I don't know, it's never fun to be chastised, I guess. But you can understand her now, and I'm sure that's a really, really great feeling.
Yeah. I mean, I can understand very minimally of what she says. Mm-hmm. Like, most of the time, like, we've learned, like, 2 grammar concepts in class so far, so I'm not an advanced speaker. I can't really understand, like, our audio exercises.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the coolest thing is I can pick up, like, teeny little phrases that she says. Like, I think I can count on my fingers the times I've understood her. She's asked, like, what my professor's name was. She's told me to read things in Korean. She asked where my cousin went one time, and I understood her, and I was really proud of myself.
Yeah.
And then, like, little words that she says, I'll be like, oh, like, I learned that word in class. But generally still, yeah, I don't really know what she's saying most of the time.
Great. Well, thank you for talking to me.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So did my conversation with Hannah today make you think about a story you've always wanted to tell? Is there an opinion that you've always wanted to talk about? Send an email to voices@georgetownvoice.com, and I promise you will get a reply. Thank you again so much, Hannah. Any last words for our listeners?
Abolish GUSA. That's all.
It's very topical these days. Before I sign off, I'd like to thank Pana, this semester's assistant podcast editor, for our fantastic music, and give her, along with Kayla, our podcast editor, a shout out. I hope you'll tune in to our next installment of Fresh Voices next week. Thanks for listening.